This podcast does contain spoilers, so if you're okay with that, listen on. If not, pause the podcast, go watch the movie we're about to talk about, and come on back.
All right, sweet.
Excuse me.
Brian, over here. Hey.
Pardon me.
Why don't you have the popcorn? It's starting!
Woo!
Hey! Shut up and listen to the podcast. Hey!
There's a lot out there to see. This is what we watched.
Viewers can't see it, but he just showed us a picture of Shawshank Redemption, but instead of Tim Robbins, it's Prison Mike. Prison Mike from The Office. Oh, my God.
And Morgan Freeman's the Belle of the Ball.
Oh, my God. All right, well, we've already gone off the rails, and we haven't even got started.
Off the rails.
What we watched.
All right.
Well, this is a movie review podcast, I think. I don't know. We'll see what happens today. This is a movie review podcast for movie lovers, for TV lovers, and for those who like spitting on things.
Hot.
Yeah.
That was the last episode, the head.
No. That was this. We're talking.
It's
first
this
of all,
episode.
First of all, so sorry. We're chaotic, apparently. So we are talking Fallout. We're back. I've got Matt Plimpton. I've got Luke Antonio here with me. I'm Brandon. We don't have video, but we are going to be on YouTube. We've got Spotify. We've got Apple Podcasts. We've got Google Podcasts. We've got wherever you get your podcasts. Go check us out if you haven't. Given us a like and a follow. See, I'm already all over the place. But yeah, we're talking Fallout. And today we're talking not the head, Luke. I'm pointing at you. We're talking the ghouls.
Oh, not the head, the ghouls.
I want to jump in and say I love this episode.
Yeah, this is a pretty good episode.
It is just the right amount of dark and humorous at the same time, especially with the character of Snip. We'll get into him as we get further in, but I loved this episode because it also was, I think, a real turning point. We keep talking about Lucy, Ella Purnell's character, and what she's been forced to do. This episode is where she's beginning to kind of embrace what the ghoul has been saying to her.
Yes, yes.
And I'm really excited to talk about this episode because this is my favorite episode of the series so far.
This is a good episode. This is a really solid foundation. And this is the midway point, by the way. This is halfway through. So can't wait to talk about this with you guys and see where your thoughts are overall with the series so far. Like I said, I know we still have a whole second season coming, which the creator has said that it's coming as quickly as humanly possible, which means
that was the last episode, the head.
2026.
You know what, Luke? Get your mind out of the gutter.
Get your mind out of the... God, I can't think of it. What is that from?
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Oh, of course.
Whitest Kids You Know.
Of course it's Whitest Kids You Know.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
And we're three more of the Whitest Kids You Know that never participated on that show, but we grew up with it.
I have 15% Mayan.
You have fucked up now.
Now you fucked up.
Mr. President, will you please shut up?
Sex robot. What does he want?
One of my favorite Whitest Kids You Know skits is dude's just walking down the street and someone just runs up to him from the background, punches him as hard as he can in the face. The hell was that for? The dude goes, well, you can see me? And then just runs away.
I think my favorite one is, it's Saturday!
I like
it's a grown man celebrating Saturday like a kid.
I like happier and with your mouth open. And Ember's like looking at me like I'm crazy right now.
And Ember is Matt's dog who will not leave me alone. So
yeah,
go back to sleep.
She loves Brandon, which is great.
She's following Brandon around like dog meat followed the ghoul.
So, that's right.
We fell way off here.
I just brought it back.
Welcome. You did do a really good job of coming bring us back.
Nice segue.
Okay, cool. So the ghoul, right? All right. So the ghoul in episode 4 of Fallout, the show we're talking about, we're going to try and talk about. I honestly, this is a great episode, but I love the opening track, right? We've been talking about the score for multiple episodes, but this one starts off with this just bright and happy.
This is the full ink of spots sunshine. As well, I think, right?
I think so. It's got these big horns and the soaring vocals, and it's just over this wasteland, right? It's just over the desert and over this decrepit, you know, town that the ghoul is forcing Lucy to walk through. And we get up to a wellness center. And it's also completely, you know, broken down, and there's sand and dust everywhere. But we get in there, and immediately, like, there we stop, and it kind of fades, and the music picks back up into, like, this horror-esque, you know, thriller with this heart-pounding kind of music. And it's fan-fucking-tastic how quickly it shifts in tone. Yeah. And, you know, just kind of, again, shows you, hey, there's real danger in this wasteland. Like, there really is. You got to remember that. And so then it's really the first time Lucy is, like, really afraid of where she is.
Or at least when she shows that fear. I think she's been afraid the whole time.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, because she was so fine with camping night.
She's been naive this entire time. And this is when her eyes start to open.
This is the first time that she's legitimately scared.
This whole time.
Well,
I mean, come on.
She hasn't had her eyes closed, Matt. You're right. Goddamn.
No, I'm not talking, like, in a literal sense, but I think her eyes have been opening more and more this whole time.
You're right. I think they're opening more and more.
Each episode has done something to traumatize her.
This is a catalytic moment for her.
It absolutely is.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm talking, like, you know, she walks up to the lake in the flooded town where the axolotl is last episode, and she still is kind of like, oh, this is beautiful. Like, this is really nice. She walks out of besides, you know, the awe that she had when she first left the vault, like, you know, everywhere she goes, she's kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. This is kind of nice. Like,
she had that nice moment with the deer before the gulper showed up.
She's enamored by Philly and just, like, the grandeur of it, you know?
Yeah.
This is the first time that I think she's afraid of where she is. Like, actually, truly, like, I could die at any fucking second. I don't know what's happening, and I am not in control. And so, yes, I think this is a great, like, catalytic moment for her. And I think that the reason why I brought it up is because the score really does a lot of heavy lifting in this episode throughout the entire thing. It's just from the get go, and then with the tone shifted, everything. Yeah.
Get to see a nice shot of the rad roaches as they approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my wife loved that.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, even I was like,
they just want to hug your face.
No, I'm. Different kind of creature.
That was last episode, the head.
Hey.
Woo. What we watch. So.
Anyway, but so, I love how, I like what you're saying, though, because this is like the truly abandoned town where we encounter the other ghoul.
Yes, Roger. Yes.
Good old Roger.
Yeah.
Who
is repeating
his
name.
Is Roger.
My name is Roger. And he's, you know, he's starting to turn feral. And it's the first time, for those who haven't played the video games, there are ghouls, but there are feral ghouls. And feral ghouls are, they're glorified zombies. Let's be real.
Yeah,
they're basically zombies.
They're like the mutants in I Am Legend.
Yes. Yeah. Who just attack and rip your face off and will eat you, and who have no thought. They have no control. They have no anything. They're instinctual and deadly.
Mm-hmm. But this part with Roger is a great foreshadow of a scene that's coming up later in the episode.
Yes. This is such a well-built episode. There's so much. So so the first thing we hear is, I'm Roger. My name is, you know, and he's repeating this to himself. And so we, as the audience, you know, are going to know when we get to there, and we'll get to the whole plot, but that is everything is so important from here on out.
I thought his name was Robert Paulson.
Get out. Oh, Jesus Christ. He actually left.
I'm back.
Oh man, that was fast. I don't know.
Robert Paulson. I thought it was Maurice LaMarche.
What?
What Who? Are you? Why are you referencing?
You said
Maurice
Rob Paulson.
Robert Paulson.
Yeah.
Fight Club.
His name was Robert Paulson.
No, I know.
He's going further because
going
voice
further
actors.
On the joke. Rob Paulson plays Pinky in Pinky and the Brain,
and
then Maurice LaMarche is Brain.
Gotcha.
It's a layered joke.
I was the one to take the scenic route this time. Thank you. Thank you for the map.
You're out wandering the wastelands.
I was, anyway, man. I was
going back to this confrontation, or just an encounter.
An encounter
with Roger.
Yes, and I love Roger. Roger is played by. I thought I had this up. And my whole thing just Neil Huff. And Neil Huff, I think, does an just amazing job of turning Farrell, yes. but keeping it together and trying to remember like who he is and who he was and what he is supposed to be. You might know him from Split. You might know him from Spotlight, Moonrise Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a ton of stuff, but he is absolutely a powerhouse in this scene. And, you know, it kind of just also gives the ghoul a reality check as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, this is another person who I've known for all these years.
Well,
and
not all of them.
I think he's known them and known him for a majority.
Well, yeah, Roger seems says like, they... like I made it 27 years. That's a pretty good
since
run.
I started showing.
Oh, 20. Yeah. It's been 27 years since I started showing.
Showing.
Okay, but
which
that
is
means like
he started turning into a ghoul, yeah. and this shows the stakes that Coop.
But the most
could
important line
he
says
if
is,
he doesn't...
"What Roger says is." It's still not nearly as long as you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yes.
that's a lot of violence.
Yeah, that puts things in perspective.
A lot of rat away.
Yes, absolutely. Plus, we also get the Blamco mac and cheese, which is a great little drop in there. You know, little Easter egg for those who have played.
We also got some yes. shots of Nuka-Cola as
Nuka-Cola,
well.
Nuka-Cola, mm-hmm. absolutely. But yeah, so the ghoul clocks like the empty vials and he just knows the situation. Mm-hmm. And then Roger, you know, just give me just a little, I'll be back on my feet. I'll be good. And yet the reality of the situation is so much worse, and the ghoul knows that. So yeah. he's going to do what's necessary. But Roger is also like, okay, cool. Well, you and your smooth-skinned friend should probably leave before things get bad.
Yeah, I think
like,
this...
before they get ugly. Yeah.
Again, for Lucy, I think it really shows Lucy what she's up against. Like,
well, I thought so too, but then on this rewatch, I went, she really has no idea.
Yeah.
Even when we get to the supermarket, which I don't want to jump too far ahead just yet, but she really doesn't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And that is even more critical, I think, as well.
Absolutely. And that's what I've been trying to say. Like, she's had her eyes opened in each episode. Like, she comes in with wonder, and it's completely taken away
yes.
later on.
Yes, you are absolutely right.
She goes outside for the first time. Oh, skeletons. She goes to Philly, and her whole way of life is taken down by the store owner.
Yep.
And then she sees all the violence happening yep. there. She goes into Wonder at the lake, used as bait for the axolotl,
yep.
the gulper.
Yep, absolutely.
But to clarify, she knows what she's up against with Cooper, with her ghoul.
I don't even know that she
because
may,
I think
okay
she does.
After this yes I think yeah. you're right because but at the same time like there is a little bit of compassion there is still Cooper in the
oh, yeah.
pool because yes this is you know it is the wasteland and everything but he takes out Roger in the most humane way possible. He does it in like the of mice and men way.
Yeah,
think about a good memory, think about how good something tastes, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. go back to who you were, smile on his face, you know, telling a story and his
yeah.
brains get blown out.
And then,
yep. and then the work begins.
Then the real work begins oh. because that ass jerky ain't gonna make itself. That was one of my favorite lines, and I was like, they do such a good job of reminding you how brutal this world is
yep.
in
yep.
interesting ways. Because again, it was a mercy killing from Coop, and you're like, okay, I can understand that. Mm-hmm. And then he turns around and he's like, food is food.
Food is food.
And that ass jerky ain't
yep.
going to make itself. And she asks him a deep question, and he stops for a second, and he's like, let's ask that question, or one good question deserves another.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing all the heavy lifting here?
Right,
and
why am I doing all the work?
To make the jerky.
Exactly.
It's
and again,
like, oh,
which,
my God!
Which brings up another perfectly cut title card, which I didn't say in the last episode, but, you know, with the
oh,
desert
yeah.
blown away, but this one's just this blood splatter. Which again, mm-hmm. just perfectly placed,
it's,
and I love
it. It's kind of like with Invincible, yeah. like anytime mm-hmm. they say the title,
yeah.
mm-hmm. it gets bloodier and bloodier. But mm-hmm. this time, it's different aspects of the world of Fallout.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
in this episode, it's the blood spatter. I can't remember what it is for the other three.
So I actually have it pulled up. I'll see if I can drop a link down. There's on Reddit, the Fallout subreddit has a. Like a whole mashup of all the title cards.
Nice.
I'll send it to you guys
you
for Reddit. Sure.
Please do.
But yeah, there is pretty fantastic. You've got the bullet holes for episode 2.
Oh,
you've got the right. sand kind of blown away, Fallout, like, you know, the letters for the last episode. And then you've got the blood splatter on this one.
Okay.
Which are all just done so, so very nice. Well. But I want to go back to the question that Lucy asks, because, and you know, we're spending a lot of time up front, but I think it sets up so much of what we're going to talk about here later on. But it's such a good question that Lucy asks, you know, why keep going? If this is what you're living for, why? What, you know, and well, yeah, it's the first hint. This... And Luke, you know what we're talking about. Matt, you know, for, you know, at least a little bit of what the ghoul is doing and why he keeps going. So I want to know, based on what you've seen, because you've only seen these four episodes, what do you think the ghoul is actually going for? Like, what is he continuing for? If he has to resort to cannibalism and to killing and to beheading and to torturing and all of these things that it takes to survive, what is it that makes him want to keep going?
I think Voltek has his daughter.
All right.
I think he was their poster child, and during all this time, they just keep winter soldiering him, basically putting him in a grave and filling him with drugs, and then they pop him out. And the longer he's out, the more irradiated he gets, and that's how he has become the ghoul that we know.
All right.
Whether or not that's the actual case, I'm sure I'm going to find out in like episode 6 or 7. But I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm excited for you, and I love that. That so far is probably my favorite of your theories. Because that to me has the most intrigue and the most interesting, like, what do you mean they have his daughter, you know? But I think that definitely would give him the most drive, the most, you know.
Or maybe it's tied to something with Vault 31.
That's also possible.
Because we get more of that in this episode, too.
Well, we get a little bit more.
And then so much more. Quickly after, in the same scene, right, he asks what her name is again.
Yes.
Which is just another great foreshadow of something.
Great. Great foreshadowing. And it's the first time that he's like, you know what? I had a hunch about something, but I definitely... What is that again? And again, like, you just see this demeanor change and this whole...
It's shadows of his old humanity.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is, in a way. All right, cool. So then we get back into the vault, into 32, who are the two? As Woody and, is it Reg?
Let's take a look. I think it's Reg. Here.
I think it's Woody and Reg, as they're kind of vying for overseer. Yeah. They've got posters up and they're so like polite to each other. Again, neither one like is giving in, but also neither one is like conceding.
It is so petty yet polite.
Petty. That's perfect. It's petty and polite. It's yes.
Like, oh, you put up a poster? Yeah, I put up a poster. And I think one of them says, like, I put up 10 posters. That was his effort.
He's like, I've been admiring yours as well.
Yeah, it's so great.
Fantastic. But then we kept teasing it last episode. So thank you for bearing with us as we get through Fallout. But No, go ahead.
I was just going to interrupt with a joke.
Oh, please do. Always do.
Do you think the one curly hair guy, what's his name?
That one is Woody.
Woody?
Yes, that's Zach Cherry. That's Woody.
Do you think Woody remembers his surface life when he's in the vault and then remembers his vault life when he's on the surface? Because he's from Severance.
That's
a Severance joke.
That definitely, I was like, where's the connection here? That... No, I don't think he remembers at all in any way, shape, or form.
False. But I like that little comedic campaign, but it reveals something deeper with the other councilwoman. What's her name?
That
Ruby?
Is, my goodness.
Why do I want to say her name is Ruby?
That one is Betty.
Betty. Thank you.
Leslie Uggams plays Betty, and she just is crushing. She crushes it.
So
100% embodies this character so well.
She's planting more seeds with Norm.
Yes, which is what we were talking about last episode.
Yes.
Is, hey, we'll get to this conversation about how Norm's words carry weight. And it really, truly is like an eye-opening moment for him.
I think she's trying to play him and like kind of embolden him to... think he's a leader when he's not, but he's actually taking it to heart and being like, oh no, I do have weight here. I do have pull because my dad was the overseer.
Because of who I am, because of my name.
Yeah.
Right? Because the name McLean means something.
And, you know, I think he's asking himself, what would his dad do in this situation?
I think it's even less of that.
I think we're also getting hints of what his dad would actually do.
Now, that I agree with. I do agree with. But I think it's less about asking what his dad would do. But I think it's more about, okay, I do have power. I'm not helpless. Yeah. I don't have to hide. I can go and, you know, find things out. I can be useful in my own way.
This is why this episode was so interesting to me.
Yes.
Because maybe we could talk about it like storyline by storyline, because this is when he finally goes into Vault 32.
Yes. Yes.
Discovers the bodies.
I want to get there. Okay. So that conversation again just opens and I love it. You know, with Betty telling Norm, like, she doesn't tell him what to do. She doesn't say, hey, you need to stop. You need to, you know, understand your place.
She's,
you know, fall in line.
Game.
She just says, tread lightly, which kind of goes back to what you said. Is it a test? Is she like, how far does this line go? So I love
it's
it.
It's very Ender's Game. And if you guys have read that book, have you read that book?
I saw the movie.
Okay. So the book and the movie are similar in this, but they are testing the kids, these genius level kids, how to fight and command armies, because these bugs just are able to latch onto adults and figure out how they think. So these kids are actually figuring out how they think and are able to exterminate them. And while they think it's all a game, it's actually real.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, massive spoiler there, but...
Yeah, thanks.
It's a similar thing with Norm, I think. She's testing him in a different way.
Okay.
I think she's testing him to do something drastic, which he does end up... Like, he's starting to, big time. But it's not in the way that she was expecting.
Exactly.
I mean, either way, I think this actress is really good at playing manipulative.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is so different from her role in Deadpool.
Yeah. She's just very blunt.
Am I wrong? Or is your hand really small?
makes me look huge. Anyway. All right, so we get back to the wasteland, and Lucy is dying. I mean, she's beyond her limits, right? So I love, right? So she sees the water, and her Geiger counter is going, you know, crazy.
Yep.
Is, you know, clicking, clacking, all of this, you know, all of this good stuff. But I love the ghoul fills his canteen, starts to drink, and then just looks over. As he's not even drinking it, he's just pouring it over his face. Like, he's pouring it over his mouth and just rubbing it in. Absolutely just like, you know, you want this, don't you? Fuck you.
He's like, I bet you wouldn't. Like
look at...
It's teasing her.
It's like in the SpongeBob episode where Sandy, you know, and SpongeBob have the competition and she takes off her mask and is like, you know, think about how good air is.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just that kind of, you know, that twisted, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's absolute teasing. And then, of course, when she finally succumbs and starts
so
drinking,
desperate.
Again, it just keeps going. It's adding layers to them. And then I can't remember if it's there or later, but he's like, we are the same.
Yes.
We're two sides of the same coin.
It is. Now you're getting it. And she just looks and she's like, what are you? And it's like, oh, I'm you, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Just give it a little time.
Ooh,
I love
so
that
eerie.
Line.
I love that line.
But then...
Because, well, and I want to say...
talking about the golden rule, right?
Exactly, because so was Cooper. Cooper was so about the golden rule and doing the right thing and about justice.
Even just playing a character.
He's still about living the golden rule, just differently.
It's just, no, now time has given him perspective.
Oh, but think about later.
Well,
like, shortly after, she tries to escape.
You're right.
And by punching him in the stomach, because, you know, he's...
Well, he twists the golden rule to...
Oh, very much.
Well,
treat others
Lucy
the way
just
be treated.
Because he's starting to cough, right? He's starting to have trouble breathing, and so he's doubled over, and she takes off, and what stops her is the devastation of the city, the destroyed city. So I don't know, like, what she was expecting to see, but she, like, that stopping her is like,
that.
Come on, Lucy. But then we get this perfect lasso throw to reel her back in.
That was so badass.
I love
it. Also him using the knife to cut off her finger.
Well, that's from, you know, so there's a struggle between the two of them. Again, great choreography. I don't understand why the ghoul was putting his finger near her mouth. Like, was he going to, like, clasp her mouth shut or something? Or, like, what exactly was going to happen? Because then she bites his finger off.
Yeah.
And then we get another great line. There you are, you little killer. And I love it. Again, all of these moments of, like, oh, we're actually seeing shades of who this person actually is. And not who, like, she wants to be.
Because,
she thinks she knows
that everyone has a breaking point.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's been trying to get her to that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then we get to the moment you just talked about, how a main character actually had something bad happen to them. I fucking love it. Like, there's no two ways about it. He just whips out a knife and cuts her finger off.
And
just
she doesn't even have time to truly, like, scream or be
she can't even process it.
Yeah.
Part of that is the shock. But also, it's just, like, it's shock for a different reason. Mm. Like, I can't believe he is following the golden rule, in a sense. You bit off my finger, I cut off yours.
Which is, again, another great line. You know, that's the closest thing we've had to an honest exchange so far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which really, truly, again, is. And you think about it.
She's been putting on this facade.
Yep.
And especially now that he knows that she's a McClane.
Yeah.
Not to give anything away to you, Matt, but...
I guess I'll just have to finish the series.
I guess you will.
I think you will.
I think we've been telling you to do that for...
Since episode one.
Yeah, for a minute now.
But I like being this proxy for those that haven't watched it and then come into the show and watch it with us.
I know where you're coming from. But yeah, just an amazing exchange, an amazing, you know, moment to again show how far someone can be pushed, to see how, you know, how manipulative the ghoul is, and to see, you know, just what it takes, again, to kind of survive up here. You know, you've got to be ruthless. You've got to be able to handle, you know, you got to take a punch. You got to throw a punch and take a punch. And it's just a great scene. So then we get back into the vault, and we've got Stephanie going to Chet. Stephanie, this little fucking minx, this little manipulator. She knows exactly what she's doing.
Again? What's her husband's name? Her dead husband?
Paul?
Bob?
No, it's it starts with a B. Oh my God, I'm totally blanking on it.
Brad? No.
They might be Brad. Oh, all right. We're going to take a slight quick pause while you look it up. Matt's going to look it up. But I love how Stephanie comes in because Chet has difficulties accepting, like, you know, who he's supposed to be now and you know, what his role is, because in the last episode, he comes out of the meeting with the council and, you know, he loses his job. He loses his role as gatekeeper, and his whole personality was kind of tied into who he was. And now he's just this kind of slumped over, you know, don't know what to do, depressed. And I get it, man. You lose the love of your life / your family. You lose your job, right? So part of your identity. And so, yeah, it's definitely understandable where, you know, depression would kind of come in. But then he gets some perspective, and he understands how tough he could really have it when Stephanie's like, I love that line, like, how are you dealing with the death of the father of your unborn child? Like, it doesn't seem... I fucking love it.
You know.
Bad. Poorly. The same. Yeah. And, you know, again, it just is a reminder of you think you've got problems, well... Let me show you problems. and this, oh my God, he's just coming to. So I think that Stephanie came to Chet to kind of get him to empathize with her. And originally, it seemed more to be like to get him on the side of killing the Raiders. Like, I thought that she was going to go like person to person and go, you know, hey, remember how great my husband was? Remember how much you loved him? Mm-hmm. Remember all of this good stuff? He's gone now because we're keeping these people alive.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that was originally what she was going to do and then got super fucking horny.
Water broke.
Those hormones, man, they're raging when you're pregnant.
I guess so. Hormones. I guess so.
With a W.
We don't shame here.
I know.
Matthew.
Yes.
Matthew's views and expressions are
his own. But it's just a hilarious turn of events, especially for Chet, who's like always trying to get something out of him, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
As soon as it's about to happen, her water breaks.
That's right. How explicit. He reaches in. That's a wet lady. And then she jumps up and is in excruciating pain, and that's a lot of water.
Yeah.
That's a lot of water. But yeah, that was, again, just an interesting moment between two side characters who we haven't really had a lot of time with. A lot of, you know, moments.
We're going to see more of her.
Yeah.
We will be seeing
more of her very soon. But yeah, so then we get all the way back up to the wayside. Bert, that's what it was. I told you to start with a B.
You were right.
Oh, Bert.
Oh, Bert.
Yes, I am Bert.
I am Bert.
Okay, so my question, though, is if all they wear are these Vault-Tec suits, why does she have the sweater and scarf? When does one wear those?
Whenever you feel like it, man.
But we only see them in Vault-Tec suits the entire time.
That's probably true, is when like you're going to bed or waking up or something like that, like before you put the suit on.
And we've seen her like in different costumes as well.
Like, do we?
I mean, she shared the wedding dress.
Right.
You can tell that other people have worn that, but then later in that same episode, I believe, she's in like a nightgown that's in the next episode.
Okay, cool. Yes, you're right. Yeah, you are correct. So yeah, there are times that you take it off, but that is pretty much all you wear. Also, yeah. I think that was a lot more of like what Bert had was like doing. Like I think he was knitting. Yeah. I think that like something he made. And then, yes, he definitely wore it, but something that was
way
very
too big for him, considering his shoes.
Oh, I know.
His shoes are like...
Thank you for these. I'll try to wear them.
I'll try to wear them. It's like three sizes too small. It's like meant for a child. Like, how tall was Bert? Probably about the same height as Norm.
Yeah.
Probably.
No offense to Norm. We're
so
not...
great.
Praise to the short kings.
We love short people here.
Speak for yourself.
I knew that was coming. Like, oh my God, about... a mile away?
You've got good vision.
Bigger than my thumb.
Yeah.
Oh. The fallout of that joke.
All right, so we're back at the wasteland, we get to the department store, or the grocery store.
Super Duper Mart.
Super Duper Mart. Super...
The best, like, 1950s.
Well, it's on
music.
That same note as Okie Dokie.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Super Duper.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh my gosh, it's like it's almost like the music from "It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia."
Yes, very much so.
Very reminiscent of just like this happy-go-lucky. Like you can definitely see some 50s ad man being like, "Your wife will never have to worry about dirty dishes again." Something like that.
Yes.
Come shop at Super Duper Mart.
Yeah. Shop S Mart.
It is an S Mart,
exactly.
Of sorts.
Yeah. Of course, it is.
And they,
although the people running the Super Duper Mart nowadays are not so as smart.
Yeah, they are absolutely not. But they do have boomsticks.
Hell yeah, they do.
Hell yeah, they do.
So yeah,
now
so
we get to
so we get inside
my favorite, like one episode character.
He's what's so that? Good.
My favorite one episode character.
Well, what, one of my favorite actors these days.
Good old
Matt
Barry.
Barry.
There's devious bastard
in Fallout City.
Super Duper Mart.
It's been at least a week. No, I love the robot. The floating robot is so fucking cool. Get inside, and also I love how the ghoul gets Lucy there. He's like, I've got a transaction. We'll do 60 vials, near mint condition, and then I love it. And then he just collapses. Right, and he's like, oh shit! Like
okay,
he was.
So here's my question with that. He collapses. Mm-hmm. Why didn't Lucy just leave?
Because she went inside and the door closed and then he collapsed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she didn't see that.
You're absolutely
she
right.
She didn't know, because again, I 100% agree, but I love that. Like, hey, you've got problems out here. You might as well take your chances inside, which is not a good thing for
bad
the ghoul
move.
To do.
Bad move.
I mean, again, you know, he's counting on someone, a naive vault dweller, to not be able to escape a fucking organ harvesting operation.
Yeah.
He also probably didn't want to go inside because they're collecting ghouls.
Yeah.
You think that that's it?
I do. I really do. I think it's either people that couldn't make the payments for their vials.
Okay.
Or that they were or maybe they were kind of the original heads of the operation.
Ooh, and there's a thought.
The organs that are being harvested, like they're trying to use on themselves.
Interesting.
There's a lot of ways you can look at the ghouls in the cages, but again, it's the dark turn of Snip Snip being like Cogsworth in Fallout 4, the servant robot, and just like, can I get you anything? Would you like a cotton blend, or would you like just straight cotton?
Well, and and look at his stage of he's not in the best shape at the moment.
No,
so he probably doesn't want to go inside.
Oh, absolutely not. He's beginning.
Have that air about him where he is infallible and he's got that invincibility.
Yeah,
I definitely I think it's a couple things there. It's probably you're right. It's definitely a blend. But Matt Berry's character, right? That robot is Cogsworth. That is the whole point. Is that it is supposed to be this helpful robot that does whatever it is you need and is I want one too. Everybody wants one.
Damn it, Zaltek. Yes.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? If it doesn't go
because
it follows
robots
Asimov,
never go bad.
No, of course not.
Well,
this doesn't
actually,
go bad.
If it follows Asimov's rules, then we're screwed anyway.
I want one.
I want one.
But I agree. I think Matt Berry just does an amazing job with his voiceover. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, he's been doing a lot more voice acting these days.
Mm-hmm. I think he's been in a couple episodes other than this one.
Fallout?
Yeah.
He does come back later.
He will come back.
As different characters, though, is what I'm saying.
In a way.
Yeah.
I don't think we've got there yet.
We have not.
We have not, definitely, but I don't think you've got there yet.
You're on episode 5. It might
you
be
started
episode five
or I think
six.
It's six.
I'm finished with episode 5, so I guess I should say I'm on episode 6.
He wasn't in 5, right? So it's not 5.
No. Yeah, no, okay. I think it's six. In a way, he'll come back. You'll understand when you see it. Don't worry about it. So Lucy is like using him as a therapist almost. And I love just like trauma dumping all of it. That's fucking great.
This guy, he's been dragging me around the wasteland.
Oh, you've lost a finger. That won't do at all.
He's like, I am not programmed for this.
Oh, that bit. He's like, we're low on fingers. And he's like, this is only going to take a little bit. This is only going to hurt a little bit. And like, doesn't hurt at all. But
so why?
It's the decrepit finger.
If he's just going to harvest her organs, why is he replacing her finger?
Because he's a helpful robot.
Yeah.
Because he's helpful.
And again,
his whole point is to help.
It's also to lull us, the audience, into a false sense of security.
That's exactly right.
Because
if we're being honest, that's exactly what it is.
She gets tranked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And welcome to hell.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, I just want to know, like, do you think that finger transplant would actually, like, work? Because you put a dead finger, a dead limb, a dead anything onto a living, like, that's going to get infected or it's going to...
definitely in keeping with the Fallout universe.
Sure.
Because we kind of saw a similar thing with the Doctor in episode three.
Two,
you're right. Where, you know, he loses a leg and then they kind of attach
a cybernetic one. Yeah, but that wasn't attaching a dead limb.
True. Like, but I'm saying it's similar.
Okay.
And she's definitely going to get gangrene.
Yeah, right. At least. At
the
very least.
If she's not already irradiated from the water that she drove.
Exactly.
Maybe the radiation is helping at this point.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Yeah, in this case, you want more radiation to really, you know, take the pain away.
Yeah.
Another awesome line is, I thought I was going to be here to be a sex slave. What? No, that's disgusting. I'm just here to harvest your organs.
I love that.
His cadence is so perfect.
It's perfect.
For this character.
Yes. Yes, it absolutely is just great.
Matt Berry needs to be the next Alfred. In Batman.
Ooh, I'd watch
that's
that.
An interesting Alfred, for sure.
He's got just the right
amount
of
sass. I
thought
he should have played Garfield instead of Chris Pratt. He would have been a great Garfield.
I don't think anybody wants to play Garfield.
Yeah.
Except for Chris Pratt.
And I don't
know, does Chris Pratt actually want to, or is he just...
He's just collecting a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly, the paycheck says it. Okay, so we've done some shopping at S-Mart. We've gotten a new finger. We have gone to sleep, and now we're going to go back inside the vault.
Does she get the No, she doesn't wake up yet, right?
No, yeah, she's just been tranked, and that's it. So now we're inside, and now it seems like Norm's had had a little bit of a change of heart. Maybe just slightly at least, but he's he's more, hey, I'm going to go ahead, and I'm just going to do this, and we're bringing Jell-O cake. We're bringing Jell-O cake to the fucking prisoners.
Which looks so gross, by the way.
I'm wondering, it does not look appetizing at all, but I'm wondering.
But that's very 50s. They were putting everything in Jell-O in the 50s.
You're right.
If you look at old cookbooks, it's like all fucking Jell-O. They love that shit.
Putting staplers in Jell-O.
wrong show.
Thank you. But I'm wondering if that was actually like if Norm was directed to give them cake, or he took that upon himself.
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
I think he took it upon himself.
Yeah, because again, he's showing himself, maybe not for this election, but the next one. He's showing himself as a candidate.
Okay. I think he's just starting to be manipulative and be like, let's see how easily I can push people's buttons and how quickly I can get them to do what I want without actually telling them to do what I want.
Yeah.
Which could lead to what Matt is saying.
You're right. You're not wrong.
Regardless, it's interesting that he gives the prisoners just like a slice of it. And then he gives the guard
the whole thing,
the rest of it. Like, I won't tell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's buying a little bit of trust. He's buying a little bit of good grace. He's doing just a little bit something, a little bit shifty without being too shady.
I don't know how else to describe it, honestly. It's just so, you're right. The best word is manipulative.
Yes. Yes. I love it.
Playing the long game.
And then he goes to Chet to find out, you know, or to find a companion to go to the next vault. And I love it. Again, so Chet's standing there in the middle of the doorway where we've got Stephanie giving birth on the couch to the right.
Doctor just doing his thing.
Kind of hanging out back there.
He's just like...
And then
it was giving Deadpool 2.
Sure.
When he shows up at the X-Mansion. And there's like stuff going on in the background.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I do.
But then Chet just slides over to hide Stephanie from
exactly.
you.
That's exactly what happened in Deadpool 2, I think.
Or better yet, Scott Pilgrim.
Yes.
Where she goes to check on him. Is Scott here? Oh, you know what? He just left.
Yes. Perfect timing. Great framing.
I love it. I could see Rory Culkin in this part.
Kieran Culkin?
Norm, huh?
You mean Kieran Culkin?
Kieran Culkin. He could have been a good Norm, I think.
He would have been, but I like Moises, what's his last name?
No, he's doing a great job, for sure.
Moises Arias.
Thank you. Yes. I remember seeing a video a while back, someone doing some fan casting, and they cast him as Toad. Or like a live action X-Men for the MCU.
Interesting.
Shout out to Brian Seeker on YouTube. He does these great fan casting videos, and he did this whole thing for the X-Men in the MCU. And like each of his picture, like
I'd be interested to know if he did a Fallout one.
I don't know if he did, but one of his castings did not age well. This is before all the stuff came out about Armie Hammer, but he picked Armie Hammer for Cyclops. And at the time, I'm like, oh, that's a really good pick. And then with everything else that came out, you're like, oh, God.
Never mind.
Take that back. But anyway, Moises Arias.
I bet Glenn Powell would be a good Cyclops.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Or Havoc.
Yeah.
Another Summers. Anyway.
So then we go back.
It definitely gives the Summers vibes.
Yes.
Yes. And all right, so now we've got these two guys, Norm and Chet, who are exploring into Vault 32.
Yeah.
And one's like, we're just going to do it. Chet's like, it's a bad idea. We shouldn't do this. But he goes along with it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. And we get into Vault 32. Mm-hmm. First time since episode one.
Miranda.
The first time. Miranda?
Oh, have you guys not seen Serenity?
Yes, of course. I just wasn't sure if that was what the reference was.
That's what I was referencing. I was referencing Miranda because that's exactly what I was thinking when I saw Vault 32.
Absolutely.
Have you seen Serenity?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
So that's exactly what I was thinking. They're killing each other or they're just dying on their own.
Yes. Yeah.
It was the exact same vibe.
Absolutely. And then, of course, what the hell happened here?
The
bodies, with the corn fields that are just completely dead. Then you get the, of course, you get into one of the vault dwellers, like, domicile, and you get the documentary, of course, about the lab rats who are in their eating each other in their desperation to survive.
Fork in a toaster, like, yes. He electrocuted himself. Yes. It's like, oh my god.
They have the blood.
The documentary with the rats is very hanging a lantern on it for sure.
Yeah. Which is okay. I mean, there's nothing necessarily wrong with it. No. It definitely is for those who aren't, you know, following or who are like, oh, there's definitely some great mystery and it's
you don't need to be subtle all the time. Sometimes you need a 2x4 and just being like, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is based in Christianity. Do you get it?
The set dressing, the makeup, all of this, absolutely hats off to the team for this episode and for this scene alone of making it just so eerie and creepy and feels so much like the video game when you go into one of these vaults and you start to learn a little bit of what happened inside
of
these vaults.
What brought him in there in the first place is that he didn't have access, like it was access denied when he was exploring Vault 32 on the computer.
Yes, right? To the records of what happened.
Then it culminates in that episode when he goes to the overseer's office.
Yeah.
And you can tell people have been trying to break in.
Mm-hmm.
And they have notes saying, like, what is it? Something to the death to management?
Death to management, yep. Yeah. Yep.
But when he looks at who accessed the vault, it was his mother. Using her Pip-Boy.
Yeah.
Now, was it his mother, or was it someone using
the overseer?
That?
No. Yeah,
the overseer was a guy.
We're jumping. We're jumping to when we get into the overseer's office. Right? He's all tied up and
he's
everything.
Accessing
so we're jumping. We're jumping forward a little bit, which is
the
fine.
The overseer's computer.
He finds out that the vault was open from the outside, and the Pip-Boy that opened the vault was his mother's Pip-Boy.
Right.
So again,
was it his mother actually using it?
That's the question. But I love that we get information about how long it's been—at least 2 years since any life was detected on the Pip-Boy.
Yep.
For at least one of the bodies.
It was also saying, like, all clear for months.
For months.
You know what's, her name was Rose, right?
Uh-huh.
Rose McLean.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm not saying this is always, but a lot of times there will be subtext to why a writer wrote a name. And I think it's great that her name was Rose because Rose is beautiful. But roses also have thorns.
Sure.
And it's becoming apparent that she was a thorn... For this vault, or maybe for all the vaults, she was a thorn in someone's side.
She was a thorn in someone's side. Exactly. Very good insight on that. I love it.
Going into some theory territory, mm-hmm. I think she died before she could expose anything.
She died?
Shut up. I think she died before she could expose anything, and then her dear husband opened the vault.
Ooh. Now, Matt, are you keeping track of all these theories that you have? Do you have these written down somewhere?
Yeah.
If not, can you write them down?
Brain.
I know.
Yeah, write them down.
Can you write them down so when we get to certain things, we can cross
it off? Like, this
cross
is wrong.
Off.
This was wrong. Dumbass, this was so wrong. Yes.
No, for real. I'm very curious to know
when we go back and do the
whole recap.
I'm just very self-deprecating. I love myself despite the ease of which I lean toward the opposite.
So I love the Vault 32 stuff.
So this overseer asphyxiated himself to death, right?
I don't think so.
Necktie?
I think someone else killed him.
I'm pretty sure he's got ties around him. I think they went and tied him to his chair.
Okay, secondary theory. If not my original, I think Rose did open the vault from the outside to try and free everybody.
Ooh.
And they killed the overseer, but then something was released by Vault 31 or 33 to get them all killed.
Okay.
Maybe Rosie is still in there. We don't know.
We don't know. All right, cool. Yeah. So then we get back outside, and then again, we're skipping all the way back, because I want to get back to the supermarket, and Lucy is starting to kind of wake up a little bit. She's been trained, but not clearly enough. Yeah. And we have another ghoul repeating her name to herself.
What's her name again?
Margaret? No, it's not Maria.
Martha?
Martha. My name is Martha.
Oh, God, another Martha.
Another Martha. I know. Wow. What's the significance of that name, Luke?
Martha! Why did you say that name?
It's his mother's name.
That's my mother. She's a ghoul.
I'm scared.
Wrong Martha. What? Why did you say that name?
Save Martha. I'm sorry. Too much hate.
And Lucy does try to save Martha.
She does try to save Martha.
Oh, so, but Martha turns just now, a little too late. But now backtrack again, a bit.
We know what that means because the very first scene, we have Roger. Roger. My name. He's repeating it to remind himself he's human.
Yeah.
Not to turn, to try and hold on to some semblance of his own humanity.
Mm-hmm.
We now know what is about to happen with Martha.
And we also know what's going to happen with Coop.
Exactly. Lucy, however, doesn't know this, or she doesn't pick up on this. I don't know why, out of just sheer dumb, I'm not going to change and I'm going to always do the right thing, period, the end. There are no bad consequences if you do the right thing. She doesn't pick up on this.
Yeah.
So we get Lucy in. We get Snip Snip walking by. Hey, we're going to go ahead and we got another one ready. He wants 60 vials. And we've got one of my favorite characters as well. We've got Huey, played by Maddie Carter-Ropel.
Now, is that the guy who's showing up in a lot of things these days?
Yes. Yes.
He was in Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. He was in Reservation Dogs. Mm-hmm. The first time I remember seeing him was in the series of Unfortunate Events, with Neil Patrick Harris.
Yep. Yep.
I love this guy. He always plays this character, but he's so good at playing this character.
He's so good at playing this dull, almost kind of like lazy character, but he's so funny. His execution is fantastic.
Exactly.
And so just this nice robot. I mean, just great. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So him and his partner are just watching TV, watching a movie, not doing anything. Yeah, we could do 60 vials for this one person. No big deal. And then so Snip Snip is taking Lucy off to go and harvest her organs. And how she escaped was absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Like,
totally badass. Again, great choreography. It all makes sense. The CGI is incredible in this one.
I love how he's got this giant buzzsaw. Please hold still. This won't hurt a bit. Like, are you sure about that?
Right.
But even when she is still escaping, he's still saying, please hold still. This won't hurt a bit.
Or when we're going like to the room, is like, where are you from? Never been there myself. Hope to be there soon.
There's like no conversation.
So good.
It's like, oh my gosh.
It's a programmed robot, yeah, right? It's just programmed to say things. I hate you.
Okay there, Luke.
And
he's the one that said Robro.
Shut up. No, I didn't. I never said anything. And then, of course, so Lucy escapes and she's able to, trap Snip Snip. She gets back out to the two guys.
Snip Snip the Roro.
Hands up, and Snip Snip doesn't get hurt. We have one of the greatest lines of the entire series. It's a fucking robot.
Yeah. I love that. It's so great.
We don't care.
It's a fucking robot.
You might
robot.
As well be holding up an air conditioner.
I'm surprised they're not smoking weed in this.
Seriously,
scene.
Though. Oh, I right?
know. They seem
this
stoned
is like
off their
the
ass.
The Fallout version of Beavis and Butthead.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But
absolutely.
But then she launches this dart at them, this needle with a bunch of acid in it.
Yep.
It's like, okay.
Fuck. All right, cool. I'll do whatever you want. 100%.
Let out all the ghouls.
Well, all right. So she thinks she's doing the right thing by letting everyone out of their prison. And, again, like, hey, lady, you don't know what you're doing. We're not. I said everyone. Right. Yeah. It's like, all right. Okay, cool. I guess I'll go ahead and release them. So fucking stupid. So naive. These fucking vault dwellers.
I wouldn't call her stupid, but yeah, naive. Absolutely.
No,
I think
she's seen
the little glimpse of humanity in some of these ghouls.
Well, I think this is a callback to Roger. She wanted
she
to save Roger. Now she has a chance to save these ghouls, but she doesn't understand.
Exactly.
Well, she does pretty dang quick after the ghouls take out Beavis and Butthead.
This is another catalytic moment for
This is the catalytic moment, I think.
Yep.
Because
this is, 100%.
When she confronts Martha again, Martha finally turns.
Yep.
And she has no choice. And she's, I think she, in that moment, she realizes what the ghoul did was a mercy killing.
It was. It absolutely was. Yeah. I mean, again, we see the ghoul is pushing her further and further to her breaking point, right? He's trying to show her what the wasteland is, but in a way, he's also teaching her how to survive.
Yeah.
Right? She's just resisting it because now this is the first time she has to kill somebody.
Yeah.
Right? The doctor was already dead. She just has to rip his head off. The ghoul was dead. She just has to rip his ass off.
Mm-hmm.
This time, she actually has to pull the trigger herself and kill another being. And even though these feral ghouls, which again, I love seeing how dangerous these ghouls are and how just quick and torturous they can be to someone if they're not put down. This is the first time that she's really got to take matters into her own hands and go, okay, this is it. This is what it takes to survive. This is definitely the catalyst to moving forward. Without this scene, I don't know. I don't know that she survives or that she's able to survive in the same ways.
Now, I was just doing some mental math here. I think this is like her fifth or sixth exposure to like radiation or someone that is irradiated.
Mm-hmm.
Just from going outside.
Sure.
In the first place. Then
being around the ghoul.
Being around the ghoul.
Yeah.
The gulper.
Gulper.
The water with the gulper, honestly, is probably irradiated. Drinking that water.
Oh, the water was probably the worst.
Also, actually, inside the vault with the raiders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, her husband, quote unquote. I mean,
yeah.
Pretty much. Come on. Come on, mutant baby.
Wow.
She's.
She's carrying a mutant fetus. Come on.
Yeah, it's going to end up looking like the thing from Total Recall.
Oh, Quatu?
Quatu.
That's
I don't
worst
know if you saw the latest season of Rick and Morty.
Don't they do a whole thing with
Quatus? There's a whole episode there where it's just Quatus.
Oh, my God.
Is it Quatu?
Quatu.
Quatu, yeah. The whole episode of Quatus.
Oh, dear.
You know what we're talking about?
I haven't seen the episode. Unfortunately. I haven't been watching Rick and Morty.
Have you seen Total Recall?
I don't know if I've seen the whole thing,
Have you seen there's a guy with a baby sticking out of his stomach?
And it's the baby that's actually talking.
Yeah, that's the genie. It's like a genius baby.
Or thing. I've seen, riffs on it.
It's so great.
Okay.
It's so great.
That's going to be Lucy's baby.
Okay, cool. I got you.
Anyway.
Okay, cool. So, so now we have, so now we have Lucy, killing somebody and figuring out, how to survive and everything. But we're back in 32, so we've explored a little bit more. I just want to go over anything that we missed, right? So we've got the awesome iconic sounds of the terminal, the computer terminal with the keyboard and with the whirring and all that. Like it just is so
ASMR.
So
honestly,
I love it so much.
The really great sound design in the
really
show.
Great sound design. But again, I want to know, was it ripped out of the game? Sound design, or did they recreate it? Because it sounds exactly
I'm
fine.
I'm sure it's a combination.
I'm totally fine if they took it 100%.
But they probably recreated it to sound like the game.
True. I mean, either way, it's great. But now, so we talked about how Lucy's mom's Pip-Boy is the one that opened it. We get that reveal, and then again, just thickening the plot even further, and now we're back outside S-Mart.
Yeah, nothing.
Oh, now we're back outside S-Mart.
This is how I remember to talk right into the mic.
Luke is just balancing the microphone between his stomach and
this
his
is the
chin.
One time that I wish that we had cameras up. Man, I'm telling you, I'm very upset about this, but
mouthing to Brandon, do you want me to slap him?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Why did your face go the wrong way?
Because I'm a bad actor.
Cut that.
I did it on purpose because I'm a good actor who's pretending to be a bad actor.
Sure it is. sure you are.
Oh my god. Anyway, there's also a hint of suspicion though from the newly elected overseer.
Okay.
Well, isn't this the election?
Not yet.
Well? Oh,
not
gosh.
Yet.
Okay.
Not yet. Almost.
I'm
almost
excited. Okay.
But now, so now we're outside of the S-Mart, and Lucy's got an upgrade, which is exactly what it's like in the games. Is usually one of your first stops is a grocery store. You have some encounters, you get some upgrades, you get some weapons, you get a little bit better armor, and her armor is pretty much exactly the same replica of what you would get in one of the Fallout games.
What I like, though, is that it doesn't come off as cosplay.
Right. It does not come off as cosplay. It comes off as realistic.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Which outfit?
The, well, she's like, got the shoulder pad?
Shoulder pad, yeah.
Lucy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When she leaves S-Mart, Super Duper Mart, she's got her Vault-Tec uniform kind of wrapped around her waist.
Uh-huh. Oh, and she's got a shoulder pad? Wow, I missed that.
She's got, like, this cool leather shoulder pad and then a new holster for her new gun.
Yep,
which
right.
Which is straight out of the games.
Yep.
It's your basic 10mm pistol that they use, which is great.
It's awesome.
But I love what she says to the ghoul.
Yes. Yes.
She's like, we may be alike, but I am still better than you.
Yeah.
I mean, will never be you.
Yeah,
I will
never be you. To paraphrase. Yeah, so at this point now, I think now is when she's really starting to put it together.
Yeah.
And she's really starting to think and you know, understand the wasteland and what it, not just what it takes, but like,
this is also the first time we see her audibly swear. Like,
yes.
She calls him a motherfucker.
Does she?
Yeah.
When?
When she leaves him.
Oh, I don't remember hearing that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember hearing that at all. Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, cool.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I missed the shoulder pad, so.
you miss a lot of things.
So.
That's not.
So Lucy is now confirming, like, so if you don't get the drugs, is that what's going to happen to you? You're going to turn feral? And it's the first time she's like, okay, cool. So she gives him the drugs. I may look like you, but I'll never be you.
Yeah.
Right. And that just is insinuating, like, yeah, you're right. Maybe I'll live to be 250 years old, but I'll look exactly like you. Maybe all my, you know, my skin will, you know, turn.
She probably doesn't want. I don't know if it's as much she doesn't want him to go through it as she doesn't want to have to deal with another feral ghoul on the run.
I think it's less about that. I think it's I'm never going to sacrifice my morals. I'm not going to
be. She's not going to sacrifice him too much.
Right.
She's going to make him work for it.
Well. But I think that, yeah, so what I had said or what I had written down in my notes is that she may succumb to the effects of the wasteland, but she'll never sacrifice her morals and what she knows to be right versus wrong.
Right.
Like that is she's going to let that continue to guide her. Her compass is always going to be pointed north. She's going to do what it takes, but she's always going to do it for the right reasons or what she considers
the
right
moral
reason.
Way to get what she wants.
But then that also brings up the whole dilemma of like, okay, but what is right and wrong when it comes to survival?
Exactly.
You know, yes, you think that you're being moral and you think you're being just because you're justifying it, but that's what everyone else is doing.
Yeah. There is a payoff to her helping him as a golden rule later on.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
I'm excited
is
for that.
Golden rule. Oh, you are right. Golden rule, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Are correct. My apologies. I had to think about the scene. I had to replay the scene in my head. You got it. Steel trap.
I mean, I tapped the steel trap that is my head, and all I heard was an echo, so. Make of that what you will.
It's a wasteland up there. and then, so I love the ghoul going in back into the market, and he just goes crazy with the drugs and the alcohol, as much
it's
as
like
he can
a
get.
Party for him.
Fucking party. I mean, he literally says, like, I didn't invite you to this party, but you weren't, you know, on the list.
He has got so many great one-liners.
So
like
many
that.
Great quips.
But the best part is when he discovers an old tape.
The old Western.
Yeah.
That he actually says the same line.
Yep. The same line from the last episode, which is, there's an old Mexican eulogy. Feo, fuerte, y formal. Which means he was ugly. Strong and had dignity.
Right.
So I want to touch on this before we get
out
of here.
Two out of the three.
But I'll give you two out of the three, right? So the ghoul, I mean, and this goes right back to the scene with Lucy, right? She's not going to lose her morals. She's not going to lose her compass. The ghoul has completely lost his compass. He's got no real, you know, morals about anything. He's got no qualms about killing. He has He just survives.
Are you insinuating that this is him finding his compass again?
This is exactly what I'm insinuating. And I love this scene because his morals used to be set. And this movie, in this line, right, is what's going to set him right again. It 100% is.
But
back on the path of righteousness, because underneath it all, did he ever really lose his dignity? Did he? Do you think? I think he, because with his compassion for Roger, right, he's got shades of his old self.
Not to mention his torture line in the last episode.
Yes.
Torture.
Absolutely.
Don't do shit.
Like,
torture.
Yeah.
Shit.
He wasn't torturing her.
Mm-hmm.
So he does have some dignity. He does present himself better than any of these other ghouls we've seen.
Yeah.
True. But I think that, right, so we're going back to the last episode with the movie director being like, you know, it's okay. You know, studio wants to change directions. Yeah. You know, we want
to
change your character.
They were fighting the communists.
Because of the commie.
Right.
And what they call commies? The red.
The reds.
And he, as a ghoul.
Is red? That's a stretch.
That's a huge stretch. But it is. But he is wearing a blue uniform.
I see where you're going with that. I like it.
He's wearing a blue Vol-Tec suit, mm-hmm. an American,
mm-hmm. like a goddamn American.
Yeah,
but no, what?
America, fuck yeah!
Except Vol-Tec colors are closer to Ukraine.
So,
what's your point?
Blue and yellow.
What I like about the Mexican eulogy, right? So he didn't want to kill the actor, right? That
right.
he was supposed to shoot because of all of this. You know, I'm the sheriff. Shouldn't I just let the law like happen? And you know, should I really be? You know, executing somebody, and now he has turned into the saying, right? He is ugly because his skin is definitely fucked. He is strong. We know that. But does he have his dignity? And he doesn't want 2 out of 3, right? The line in the movie is, I'll give you 2 out of 3, you commie bastard.
Yeah.
So there's a whole mix of things going, you know, do I want to be like the commie bastard and only have 2 out of 3, be ugly and strong, but have no dignity? Or do I want to change my ways? Do I want to remember who I was and remember, mm-hmm. you know, how I could justify things and how I used to actually act and be and what I believed in before it was all taken from me?
Yeah.
I think that sitting down and watching himself was definitely a turning point for the ghoul.
And if Russia is red and the Ukrainian colors are blue and yellow, and the Vol-Tec is blue and yellow, and he is making a commie reference, then we're getting a lot of commentary here on Russia and Ukraine in the midst of this war.
The views of Luke Antonio do not necessarily represent views of
and then
what
I'm
we
like,
watched.
Luke may be short,
Sophia
but he's
Petria.
Stretching.
And I go...
You may be short, but you're stretching like Mr. Fantastic with that theory.
Oh, man. But yeah, I just...
Stone cold.
What is that line from Always Sunny when he's talking about Sylvia Pepe? He's
oh,
like,
Pepe Sylvia.
What does he say?
Then I go to Carol in HR and I go,
Carol!
What do
I go,
find
Lucy,
out?
Lucy!
What do I find out? There is no Carol in HR.
There is no Vol-Tec.
There is no spin. There is no Warren Bossing say.
There's a lot of layers here, guys.
There's layers.
With this movie and the ghoul.
Oh boy. Yeah, we're getting off the rails. So we're gonna go ahead and start wrapping up here, but I love this episode because it does. It really shows again. What the breaking point is, what happens when you go past it, can you actually get yourself back? Can you get your humanity back? Is there a way for you to undo everything that you did?
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a shitload of comedy in this as well. This is a really, really fun episode. It's really good. It's really well done. Plus, we get the credit scene, you know, the pull out of the movie theater. That's great.
Yes.
That's great.
I love that.
The tease of the protection robots.
They've all been finding their morality.
See, it goes to the drive-in, and then what's after the drive-in in the end credit scenes?
Think it's just the drive-in.
No, there's something else. Because
parking lot. There's an industrial area.
The bridges. So in the next episode, as you've seen, there is the scene with Max and Lucy
mm-hmm.
on the bridge. Going by on that bridge. So yeah, each end credit scene is
well, there are train tracks and we do see some train cars.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right, sweet. Cool. Good to know. Good to know. Looking forward to that.
I just thought of another dumb reference.
What?
They spent this whole episode looking for their moral compass.
Uh-huh.
Have you checked your butthole?
Let's get up, bit out of
butthole. this is where my mind goes.
Love it. Love
it. So dumb, but I love it.
All right, guys. So what did you think of episode 4? We're at the halfway mark now. We're almost, you know, we're halfway through the season. We're almost through. What do you feel? What are your thoughts? What are your feelings? What do you feel about the episode as a whole? What you got for me?
Again, I think this was the best episode they've done so far.
Okay.
It's definitely exploring a lot of ideas that I love getting explored in sci-fi, especially post-apocalypse sci-fi. It's definitely dark with its humor. Like, we were talking about this in the previous episode, and I think the reasons that you guys liked the previous episode are the reasons I liked this episode the most. I think the humor just hit better for me. I think
there's not a lot of Maximus.
There is no Maximus in this.
I'm excited to see where he goes in the next episodes, but at the same time, I'm just like, Max, there's something that's about Max that's rubbing me the wrong way.
Do you see yourself in Maximus?
Maybe I do, and I'm just projecting, you know?
Is Maximus a Hufflepuff?
No, all but right. I do have power trips.
I know think you this do. Episode was a great turning point for the story, for a lot of the characters, which is exactly where we should be. Mm-hmm. We're on beat, and, you know, I trust Jonathan Nolan enough to, he knows story structure, and he's fulfilling on that very well.
Yep, yep, and we're inching closer to the truth. We're inching closer to what's coming. Can't wait to hear your reactions coming up.
Yes.
Everyone who hasn't seen, I almost said Dune, whoever who hasn't seen Fallout, let us know what your thoughts are about halfway through the season. If you're waiting for us, we love that. Let us know in the comments. What are your thoughts about what's coming? Some of the theories that you have for these characters, or what are some things that we may have missed that you want us to talk about? Please let us know. Like I said, we're all over socials. We've got YouTube, we've got Facebook, we've got all the good stuff. All that's in the show notes. We'll be talking episode 6 here very shortly. Matt, Luke, thank you for a great 4 episodes. Can't wait for the last 4 while
Same
we
here.
Wrap this thing up and we figure out what the hell is going on.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie.
All right, everyone, enjoy the movies. We'll talk to you soon.
You know, if there was a Judd Apatow spinoff of Girls, the show, do you know the show Girls?
No, of it.
But it's Ghouls.
All right, bye.
Bye.